Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Yvonne Pierre Show. Hear from people who have overcome obstacles, have inspirational stories to tell, or helpful information to share.
Our child, and we were to take her home. Remarkable advice for that era when many children with Down syndrome were put in institutions.
I was living for today, not caring about tomorrow.
The Yvonne Pierre Show, a variety talk show whose only mission is to empower you.
And I turned around and I remember this 48 years later of when I turned around and I said to her, no, I can do it. That kind of set the tone to her right from the beginning that even though I was in a chair, you know, I was still independent. I was still going to do things.
I believe that everything happens for a reason. We are vessels that have the option to allow God to use us.
Make a choice to break the generational curses on our life.
Thank you for tuning in. Now, here is your host, Yvonne Pierre.
Welcome and thank you for tuning in. Joining us today is the author of Making It Count, Putting Meaning Back in Business and Relationships, Bryant Hurlbut. Has over 20 years of business and consulting experience. He has worked with large corporations, small businesses, state governments, and not-for-profits. He says, your life is too short to allow bad relationships with coworkers, managers, neighbors, and family to steal what could be your greatest days. Your life is better. Your life can be better if you learn to adjust your thinking. Brian?
Hello.
Hey, thank you and welcome.
Thanks, Yvonne.
And did I mispronounce your name?
You got very close. You're one of the few people that has actually gotten close to it. It's a difficult name to pronounce, but it's Bryant Hurlbut.
Hurlbut.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's great.
I did read the book. I haven't finished, but I really did enjoy reading the book, and I think that it's a really informative and inspirational book to read. Before we start talking about the book, could you give us a little brief history of your professional background?
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. I started as a business and IT consultant almost 20 years ago now, and began working as a junior associate to a firm, and then worked my way up to a senior associate, and then finally ended up going out on my own completely, and so I am self-employed now. I have a small business. I'm a small business owner. I have a handful of employees, and have enjoyed great success in my field of work. I love to go into organizations and help them figure out what's wrong with their organization as a whole and work at refining and correcting those things, working with organizations to help refine their internal struggles. You know, you see department struggles and people struggles in every organization. So I get to go in and enjoy the process of helping them create fun at work rather than work at work. So
wow.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, you are the author of Making It Count. What is the book about?
Making It Count is really a guide for the reader to help them adjust how they think through their life. The goal is really to cause the reader to evaluate all that they hold dear and to look at the value of relationships and what happens when we don't focus and give honor in those relationships, what kind of travesty not doing that brings into our lives. And so as people read this book, they're going to find skill sets and tools that they can use to make their life count, to make their decisions count, to bring meaning back into their life, meaning back into their relationships, and to find a passion, a desire, something that they can pursue for the rest of their days.
Wow. What inspired you to write it?
You know, I began noticing probably 10 years ago that there has become a larger and larger disconnect in the workplace. It seems that people become disengaged, that they go to work in a clamshell mentality. They go in, they do their work. Maybe they've got one or two people that they might talk to, but when they leave their office, they go home, they walk in the door of their house, they make themselves dinner, they turn the TV on, they're there the rest of the day, they go to bed, get up the next day, and they're in the same rut. And so there's just not a whole lot of investment in those workplace relationships. There's not a whole lot of investment in relationships even outside of work. I mean, as an example, when's the last time, Yvonne, that you had somebody just come by your house and knock on the door and say, hey, we were in the neighborhood, we thought we'd stop by to see how you were doing?
That's true. They'll send an email or something.
Yeah. There's a disconnect. You know.
Yeah.
But if you'd go back even, you know, go back even 50 years, which isn't that long in the grand scheme of things, but go back 50 years and you see that people would be sitting on their front porches rather than in their backyards behind privacy fences. They'd be drinking coffee out on their front porch. They'd be reading a book. Neighbors would walk by. They'd say, hey, come on up. You want some coffee? And they'd invite them over, or a soda pop, or whatever the case may be. In the workplace, you see the generations of those who are really, I would say by now, in their 60s and 70s, where they would engage each other in an honorable way in the workplace. My grandfather is a great example of this. Can I give you an example of his life?
You sure can.
I live in the heart of the Midwest. I mean, if you were to draw a line from Seattle, Washington to Miami and from New York to Los Angeles, where those two lines intersect as an X, right in the middle of that is where I live, which is right in Salina, Kansas. And we have, you know, harvest here is a big thing. This is when the farmers make or break their year. And so this year they had a great year. You know, they're getting $8 a bushel for their wheat, which is the best price they've gotten in a long time. But here's what happens today. People, as farmers, typically across the board, they have this big equipment, and they are solely set on getting that crop in. They want to go in, and they will work their tails off. And once they get their crop in, they start going on to whatever's next on their farm so that they can keep up, you know, in front of the eight ball, as it were. Well, in my grandfather's day, I used to help him bring in the harvest. And here's how it would work in my grandpa's day. You would go, and you would do your harvest, and as soon as you were done, you would take all of your equipment over to the neighbor's field, and you would help him bring his harvest in. And then when you two were done, because now obviously it took you a lot less time to get that second set of fields done because you had two sets of equipment working on it, then you two would go to the neighbor next door to him. And now you've got three people cutting his harvest and bringing it in. Because weather is the enemy of a harvest. If you get rain, you get hail, you lose your harvest. And everybody knew the necessity of working together in relationship to create a harvest experience where they were working together, you know. And
yeah.
So, you know, and so now here we are, we've got the situation where everybody is so self-focused and so introspective that they don't work together, you know, and everybody goes into their own world and they work, and then all of a sudden they go home and they don't think about anybody else.
Right. Right. And it seemed not to be that long ago, because I remember I'm 36, and growing up, the neighbors, just using that as an example, our neighborhood kind of stuck together. The older generation kind of looked out for each other's children. And now that I'm older and have my family, I don't even know my neighbors. So I can see a drastic change in the way we all communicate with each other and help each other out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, that's one of the things that, one of the reasons why I wrote the book, one of the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing with it, is because I really would love to see people re-engaged in the workplace and their personal lives. I'd love to see people, I would love to see people do things like, you know, inviting neighbors and friends out for lunch and creating a workplace environment where you go to fun, and it's just a fun place to be, and it's not a labor and a burden to do that, you know.
Right. Which brings me to my next question. Your subtitle reads, Putting Meaning Back in Business and Relationships. This is a two-part question. Is there a connection between business and relationships, and how are they connected?
Oh, absolutely. There is no way to unlink the two. When you have a relationship in business, it only helps you to succeed. When you're in a good relationship with somebody, you have a higher trust level, you have a higher dependence on one another, you have the ability to go into situations that may otherwise be discouraging or frustrating, and know that you don't have to do it alone. That you've got a team with you that's going to walk through those trials, those difficulties. When you're going through difficult times at home, and every one of us have difficult times, you may lose a parent, you may lose a spouse, or even a child, you could have a child who's born with a sickness or some kind of an illness or whatever the case might be. You have the ability, when you have strong relationships in your workplace, to have people who will walk alongside of you and help you bear the load of your life. You have to keep in mind that most of us, we all have 24 hours. That's a given.
Right.
And most of us spend anywhere from 6 to 8 hours a day sleeping. So that's a third of our day, give or take. And then we'll spend anywhere from 8 to 10 hours a day working.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes us up to anywhere from 16 to 18 hours out of a 24-hour day. So we spend, as far as our waking hours go, we spend by far, the majority of our day with people who are not typically our family members.
Sure.
And unless we create that relationship with those people, we're cheating ourselves.
How can people set margins in their personal and work lives?
I think you have to start from the end and work your way forward.
Okay.
And when I say that, I mean every one of us will end up at some point in our lives, certainly, every one of us will die. There's no way around that.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage people, it's like, you know what, start at the end of your life. When if you could, and this is maybe a little saddening or morbid to some people, but bear with me because I think we have to process this and almost really embrace this to make our lives really count. But if you were able to, sit, in a loft somewhere and watch the service that they would have, that people would have at the end of your life, and you were to hear the words that people would say about you and about your life, and you were able to see the number of people that came to your funeral, the number of people that respected you, that cared enough to take time out of their week to go and pay their last respects to you, how many people would you want to see? What would you want them to say about you? What would you like them to say about you? would you want them to say, well, he was kind of a jerk, and I'm
right.
glad he's dead. would you like to see 6 people at your funeral? I deal a lot with funerals because I deal with people at the end of their lives, and I've been to funerals where you have packed a 400-seat auditorium to the gills, and I've been in that same 400-seat auditorium where there were 10 people.
Yeah.
And I look at that and I think, dear Lord, don't let me live a life that affects so few people that there are 10 people who show up after
right.
I'm gone.
Right.
So I think in the idea, we're going to margins, you have to look at where you're going to go and you say, okay, these things in my life are important. When my life is over, this is the legacy that I want to leave. I want to leave these relationships. I want to instill these truths, these processes in the generation and generations that will follow me. And when my life is done, here is what I want to see. This is what I want to end up with. And then you begin working back from there, and you say, okay, for me to accomplish this, I have to give more money than I'm giving right now. I have to be benevolent. I have to remember organizations, churches, missions organizations, people and agencies that feed the poor. I have to begin living beneath my means and giving to those entities so that I can affect the world through their arms, through their eyes, through their hands. And then you say, okay, I'm not imperfect. You know, I'm certainly imperfect. I'm not a perfect person. I have to have time to refuel. I'm going to schedule my downtime. I'm going to schedule time during my day, during my week, where I just have time for me. And then let the chips fall where they may. Those are the two most important things. Where do you want to end up? And make sure that you have time for yourself. Once you've met those goals, then you can fill in the blanks with whatever else is left in your day.
Wow. Wow. You mentioned live beneath their means. And you also talk about this in a book. What does that mean?
Living beneath your means is a key part of Making It Count, the book, Making It Count. It really honestly embodies the heart, I believe, of what we should have in the United States as far as our finances go. You know, capitalism is a pretty phenomenal thing. You know, we can work hard and make money in the United States. We have the ability to really invest ourselves wisely, invest our finances wisely, and we can make a living, a decent living. The people in the United States that live at poverty level still make more than 75% of the world. And, I mean, that just goes to speak. We have a phenomenal amount of wealth in the United States. Now, wealth is not a bad thing, but it's not necessarily a good thing either. It really is dependent on how we use it. And,
right.
And I would suggest to people that the real wealth of their lives, the real value of their lives, comes when you choose to live beneath what you could live, and you take the difference and you invest it and you give it away to other agencies, to other people that need it. We make a common habit in our lives of giving away. Every year we give away over 20% of our income to people, individuals, agencies. We support our local church. We would love to be able to help feed the poor overseas, and we can't be there. And so we give money to agencies that we trust to feed people that don't have the ability to feed themselves or who don't have the finances to feed themselves. But how we're able to give 20% of our income away at this point in our lives is because we chose to live. We live in a 950-square-foot house. We don't have a 6,000-square-foot house. Could I afford a 6,000-square-foot house? Absolutely I could. But I don't need it.
Right.
If I had 6,000 square feet in my home or 3,000 square feet, it would be that much more I would have to clean. You know, you know what I'm saying? There are downsides to owning more in the same sense. But,
right.
But because we chose to live in a smaller house, we paid it off in 7 years instead of 30 years. We don't have any debt. We have no debt at all. We have no credit card debt. I say that, I need to retract that. We've got a little bit left on one of our vans, and that's all. But we don't have any other debt other than that van. That's the last thing that we have to pay off. And we have made a decision to live beneath what we could live so that we can continue giving money to others.
And why do you – I absolutely believe that. Why do you believe that – is important to give?
Well, I have to admit, there is a man that I really esteem that in my life. I have a mentor that I've known for probably 26 years or so now, and he has come alongside of me and has been with me in a number of situations in my life that just would have probably broken me had I not had somebody that I could confide in and walk with. And he is the person that I will share and talk with about the struggles in my life. And you know what? It's you have to have that mentorship. And I have that in a man named Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And some people may find that to be offensive. And I, you know what? I'm not ashamed of the fact that I do, though.
Right.
He's affected my life absolutely, 100%. And so I look at what he accomplished in his life and what he felt was the most important. And he was the one that said, you know what, it's better to give than it is to receive. And he was the one that said, if you want to lay up treasures for yourself once you've died, if you want to lay up treasures in heaven, sell all that you have and give it to the poor. And so when I look at living beneath my means, it helps me keep a good balance because I find that if I don't give and I don't give aggressively, then I end up focusing on the things of my life rather than on the people of my life. And I don't want to focus on things.
Right.
Because I can't take those things with me. But
right.
if I can take $300 and give it to a single mom with three kids that's having trouble getting groceries, and I know that I can help her, then I'm going to go give her that $300. If I know that I can give $1,500 to help a number of families in Myanmar after this horrible atrocity that happened in Myanmar, I'm going to give money to help these families in Myanmar. And you know what? I know for a fact that when I continue to live that way and I live beneath my means and I do that, the reason that it carries so much value is because I know that those are lives that I will touch and that will carry with me as I not only go in this life, but as I proceed from this life into the next.
Wow. I absolutely, like I said, believe that that is more to life than just the individual, and to live selflessly. I have a list of other questions too, but this is really interesting and inspirational. Technology has changed the way we communicate, as we touched on earlier. How has this affected our relationship skills?
You know, it really, I think, has cheapened them, and it's sad to say. But if you think about, and I say that, let me retract that just for a second, because I want to say that there is a segment of our relationships I think it may have enhanced, and I'll cover both sides. But as an overall, I think it's cheapened them. We end up communicating when it's convenient using technology.
Uh-huh.
As an example for this. I'm in the IT field, and I drug my feet. I couldn't imagine why anybody would enjoy using text messaging. It didn't make any sense, you know. I remember thinking, why would anybody want to text message somebody using their phone? Why don't they just pick up the phone and call?
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, you know what? I'm gonna. And this has been, of course, a number of years ago, but. I'm going to start doing the text messaging thing, and what I've discovered is this, that with text messaging you can communicate with somebody when it's convenient for them and for you, and it really doesn't matter.
Right.
It's a factual exchange, and you know, you can be sitting up at 11 o'clock at night and send a text off to a friend, and if they're up, they'll text you back, and you can communicate anywhere in the world using text messaging now, rather than incurring phone charges. You know.
Right.
But what's happened is we've reduced our face-to-face contact with people. You have email, you have telephony, you have text messaging, and so the time in the old days, Yvonne, you and I would have I would have flown to your radio station, and you and I would be sitting across from one another in front of a microphone, staring at each other, seeing each other's facial expressions, looking at each other's eyes. We could read one another's expressions and intentions by looking at how we were saying things, not just hearing, but seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And we've completely almost eliminated that in the majority of our communications, because we don't have face-to-face anymore. People don't come by your house and sit down and talk face-to-face. Now you get an email. On the flip side of it, there's a little bit of benefit, because you have community organizations such as Facebook and Twitter and places like that, where maybe people you haven't seen for years, you catch up with, and maybe somebody that lives 1,000 miles away that you will never see because you don't intend to make the trip, you're not that close of a friend, you're able to actually invest in and create a deeper friendship because of those types of entities. So I think as an overall it's hurt, but there are those little spaces where it's helped a little bit.
Yeah. Now you can pretty much not leave your home. You can
no, it's the truth.
Do everything
absolutely.
Over the computer now. Yeah. So it has affected the way we communicate with each other. And like you said, it is a lot of benefits. There are benefits to it, but it's also when you face-to-face with people now, you really don't know what to say because you're talking – in text terms.
Yeah,
like
and, you know,
text
absolutely. That's exactly it. And, it'll be interesting to see how long it takes for LOL to reach Webster's Dictionary, you know, or
right.
or you know, MMK or whatever the little, you know, the acronyms are. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But you know,
yeah.
in making it count, that's one of the things that I talk about in the book. Is we have to remember that communication, effective communication, has to happen face to face. There are just simply some things that don't work if you aren't face to face. You know, I tell people if you're doing an email, and we cover this in Making It Count, if you're doing an email to somebody, if you're more than a paragraph long, or if you sense any emotion while you're typing that text message or that email, you need to stop and think, okay, you know what, there's emotion involved with this, or stop and say, okay, you know what, I've gone more than a paragraph. I need to evaluate, should I really be sending this or not? And if there's any emotion in it whatsoever, go ahead and finish the email. Go ahead and type it out. Print it off, but don't send it. And sit on it for a day, and then the next day come back and reread it and take your highlighter and highlight the main points that stick out to you in that document that you were going to send.
Mm-hmm.
And then schedule a face-to-face meeting with that person, and you know what? Embrace the discomfort and work through it and honor that person. And you'll hear me use the word honor a lot. That's one of the things that I really want us to do, is to put honor back in those relationships. Honor that person by seeing them face-to-face. Honor them by letting them see you face-to-face and talk it through.
There is, and since we're talking about communication, and I have a 15-year-old, so most of their communication is is through text messaging and emails and Yahoo Messenger. Is there a lack of emphasis on relationships and meaning in both life and business with the younger generation?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I did Making It Count, that I'm working this way, is because I see such a huge disconnect with the generation of people that are basically, I think, probably from my generation down, so start at 40 and go south. When you compare the disconnection between that generation and the generations above it, it's pretty steep. You have people now who are in their 30s and 40s who are managing 50 and 60-year-old people, and they don't know how to communicate with them. They don't understand what makes them tick, why they feel sensitive about the things that they do. They don't understand how to include them in their group. They just kind of deal with them as they have to and hope that they retire. And you know what? We are lacking. There's so much wealth. We're lacking so much of the benefit of the wealth of those generations above the 45-year-old, you know, work group. That 50-some, 60-some generations of people have so much to give, so much to offer. And the younger generation, I think, my age and below, really struggle with how to glean that information, how to use it, how to enjoy that generation or those generations.
Wow. I agree. And I see it a lot, not only in the workplace, but just in a grocery store.
Yes, absolutely.
It is a big disconnect with communication, period, but the meaning, having, you know, the meaning of the work ethic.
Yes.
This is like a whole other show in itself, but I wanted to ask you, forgiveness is an issue not only in the workplace, but also in our personal lives. What advice do you have for someone struggling with forgiving a coworker or a friend, for example?
Well, I would say in 30 seconds here, I would say the first thing you have to do is remember that forgiveness is a choice. Forgiveness isn't an emotion. You know, people say, well, I don't feel like forgiving them. It has nothing to do with feeling. Forgiveness is a choice. We choose to forgive. And, you know, and if you're struggling with forgiving somebody, that means you need to go talk with them. And after you've talked with them, you know what, there's nothing wrong. Force yourself to be a benefit to that person's life somehow. Give them a gift. Invite them to lunch. Do something that squelches the, you know, hit it in the opposite side. Whatever the opposite of what you're feeling is, hit it the opposite way. And, you know, I mean, Jesus explained it the best. You know, he didn't come because he felt like it. He came because he needed to.
Wow. Yeah. You talk about leaving a legacy for future generations. What does this mean, and how do we do it?
We have got to go through the process of investing our time, our energy, and I do mean that, because that's all that the next generation really will take. You know, you see this happen numerous times.
Yeah.
If you give a child, take any age, even a teenager, give them $20, you know, they will take that $20, they will go and they will spend it on whatever they want, shirt, CD, whatever. And they'll go and they will enjoy it and they will expect more the next time. But if you invest time into that child, if you invest energy into that relationship, that's something that they'll be able to take with them and keep using. They can't spend the time that you gave them. They can't spend the energy. I'm not saying that we shouldn't give gifts or we shouldn't, you know, give finances to kids. I'm not saying that at all. But you see it in that when they receive a gift, they're, most of the time you'll see a child be less concerned with how to treat that gift. Where if you have that child work for it,
mm-hmm.
and they have to actually invest their time and energy into it, then it means a lot more to them, and they'll take better care of it. That's the part of leaving a legacy that I'm talking about. When we invest that time, that energy, and emotion, and the logic and the training in the generations beneath us, we're giving them something that will make them stronger as who they are, that will increase honor in their lives, that will give them the ability to excel beyond the other people in their generation who aren't getting the time and the energy. And so we can leave ourselves in the generations that follow us. But it's not just that finances play such a small part of that. It's the time and the investment and the energy that we set aside purposely to spend with these generations that will go on and succeed us.
Wow. This is true. And I think that that comes, too, by leading by example. And I kind of like mentoring, just as that's what our, especially parents, that's what our job is, to teach, to teach them not just working with their homework and stuff like that, but showing them the meaning of life, like you were saying, living beneath their means, and how to take from what they've earned and the importance of giving back.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, and really the topic that we just talked about and the one that we're talking about now, the question you had asked a second ago was talk about forgiveness. And now we're talking about leaving a legacy. If you don't focus on forgiveness, you will leave a legacy.
Yeah.
You know, forgiving, living a life of forgiveness and living a life of unforgiveness will leave a legacy. I have seen, and you have seen, and probably your listeners have seen, people who have become embittered through the course of their lives because they refuse to exhibit forgiveness or receive forgiveness from somebody else. Somebody may do something to them, and they will look at them, or in their own heart, they will say, I can never forgive them.
Yeah.
Or that person may come to them and say, will you please forgive me because I treated you badly, and they choose not to. You know, even after they've been offered the gift of forgiveness. Then you have the other side of it where maybe somebody does something, they do something and they go and they ask for forgiveness, and they will, and the person who they offended will not forgive them, and they have to live knowing, I've asked this person, they've never forgiven me. You know, that forgiveness is a huge part because we're human. We make mistakes. None of us is perfect. We will all fail miserably at some point. And how we handle the process of forgiving determines how we leave a legacy and what that legacy is. They're intertwined, absolutely.
Wow. How does your faith in God affect the way you communicate with others?
It absolutely. I shared earlier. I definitely have a biblical worldview. I really do. I think you have to start with this one basic question, and everything else has to be built from this point. And so if you're listening today and you have either no faith in God or maybe you don't know why you would even consider having a faith in God. I always challenge people with this question. It's just simply this one thing. Where did the very first atom of gas come from? The very first atom that ever existed before we see what we do, whether it was through Darwin's principles or anybody else's principles, go beyond all of that. Go before all of that and ask this and answer this question. Where did the very first atom come from? The very first one. Where did the rule that says what gravity is, where did the law of gravity come from? We don't see it. It has no physical presence. And yet it affects our lives daily. We're experiencing it right now. But it doesn't have presence in the sense of a physical nature. But it still exists, and we know it does. So where did that law come from? It's something that you can't see, but that affects your life on a daily basis. If you tell me that it has always been, then you're making as much of a case for God as I am.
Right.
Because that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that it's impossible, but that there is the creator of the universe, and that atom of gas, the very first one, and that the law that says what gravity is, came out of his imagination. He's the one that said, hey, this is what I want, and he made it. And I start from that point, and I say, you know what? There was an eternity before this world was created, and there is going to be an eternity after this world has expired.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where I start my faith. And then I go from there, and I say, you know what? I do believe that there is the God, not a God, but the God of the universe, the God who created the universe. And he has laid down rules. We have physical laws like the law of gravity, like the law of lift, the rest of the laws of thermodynamics. We have all those things that he's made that we can't see that affect us. But he also has laws that we embrace, especially in the United States. One law says you're not supposed to steal.
Uh-huh.
Well, we embrace that. That is supported all across the United States as a law that we embrace in the United States. There's a law that says you're not supposed to go and murder somebody, premeditate their murder, and then go kill them for selfish gains. That's an obvious one. We all embrace that. But it used to be in the state of Kansas, we still have the law that says it is illegal for a husband or wife to commit adultery. It's still on the books in the state of Kansas. It was punishable legally for a spouse to cheat on their spouse. We've embraced these laws. And so I go from there and I say, okay, you know what? The God of the universe made it. He made laws that I can't see, laws that I can't change. Now it's my responsibility to figure out how those work and
right.
to live according to the precepts that he's laid down. One of those rules is this, and Jesus said it. He said, you know what? If you don't forgive somebody from your heart, then neither can my Father in heaven forgive you.
Uh-huh.
And so as I work in my relationships at my workplace, as I work with my clients, I look at them. If I offend a client, I don't purposely do it, but there are times that I do. I will go back to them and say, you know what? I've offended you, and I apologize. Will you please forgive me?
Right.
Or if they offend me, I choose to do that because I want to exhibit both sides of the law. That rule that he laid down, we'll call it a rule because it's not a law in the Old Testament sense, but the rule that he laid down was that if you forgive, then you can be forgiven. And so I choose to forgive so that I can receive forgiveness. We alluded to one earlier which said it's more blessed to give than to receive. Jesus
yeah.
was the one that said, sell all you had, give your money to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven. You know what? I believe that. I don't believe that Jesus was a liar.
Right.
And so when he says, sell what you've got, give your money to the poor, I will do that. I will sell what I've got, give my money to the poor. What's that?
I said, just as he would.
Just as he would, exactly. And so in my business relationships, I have to ask your listeners this question. If everybody that you dealt with looked at you, Yvonne, and said, I am for you, I am not against you, I will never do anything willfully to hurt you. If I have offended you, forgive me, please, and let's talk about it because I don't want to offend you. I want us to have a solid relationship that's filled with trust and grace. And when you make mistakes, I will willingly choose to forgive you. If you don't turn away from me, don't turn away from me, please. When you make a mistake, and when I make a mistake, I won't turn away from you. And let's make a pact that we will be on the same team, that we'll support each other, and that we will not give up on each other until the day that our lives are done. Now, if you could have everybody around you like that, would you enjoy that?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I embrace because having a biblical worldview and holding to the fact that there is an eternity before me and that there will be an eternity after me shapes how I live, why I live the way I do. When I look at Jesus, I consider him he is the person of God in the flesh. I look at him, I think, you know what? God knew we were idiots. He knew that we couldn't handle life, and so he bridged the gap. He did everything he needed to do to make sure that we knew how we were supposed to live this life and what was important to him. And so I just take the really simple task of embracing the obvious.
I like this is really good. And I think that what a lot of people struggle with is when it comes to forgiveness, is they have something in their mind telling them, and then we're going to wrap it up. But they have in their mind that if I forgive this person, then it they're benefiting them. But in reality, they're, like you said earlier, I like the way you said it, that they offered them the gift of forgiveness.
Absolutely.
And it is, I think people have in their mind that it affects the other it's about the other person, but no, forgiveness is about your own peace of mind.
Right. You know, give me a time limit here so I know how much time we have left and all.
Okay. We have 2 minutes.
Okay. I'm going to take 1 minute of your two. Is that okay?
Okay, that's fine.
I had a situation, I covered this in Making It Count, but I had a very close friend. I've known him for 18 years, very close friend of the family, came over for dinner. We did all sorts of stuff together. He was my investment broker. In a nutshell, he ended up stealing $25,000 from me. And I didn't know that until the Securities Exchange Commission showed up at my front door and said, we need to talk. And so we went through the whole process. My wife was very upset. I had made some stupid, and I do mean stupid, business decisions. I was leveraging my business at that point. I was taking lower interest money, investing it for a higher interest rate, and then paying the balance off and keeping the difference. And so I ended up with $25,000 worth of debt in one day.
Wow.
And I had to pay that off. And my wife and I had to forgive this man for doing what he did. You know, and here's how it ended up. I looked at my wife and I said, it's easier to trust the God of this universe to return that money than to trust a thief.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote him a letter and I said, you know what, sir, I give you this money. This is a gift from me to you, and I hope all goes well with you. You know, and I went, had it authorized, notarized, handed it to him in person, and I walked away a free man. I had,
yeah.
You know, to this, and I still see that chap, and he and I, we to this day, we are friends. And you may laugh when I say that, but I go to his restaurant and eat. He comes out and sits at our table when we sit down, and we will talk and we'll catch up on times. And you know what? It's not that I have forgotten what happened, but I have chosen not to allow it to affect my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I gave him that the money that he stole. I gave him as a gift. That's what I meant earlier by hitting it the opposite way.
Yeah.
Someone steals from you, give them a gift.
Yeah.
My life's been free. It's been
yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah. What is the main message you want to leave readers with after reading Making It Count?
That it's never too late to start, first of all. That it takes effort. You have to change the way you think. And don't forget, I mean, there is value in honoring one another. There's value in honoring your family members, value in honoring your workplace relationships. Build the community around you. Invest in the people, the lives around you. Make your decisions count. Make your life worth something. Make it count.
Wow. Where can people find the book?
You know what? They can go anywhere in the United States. It's all across the U.S. If they don't have it in stock, when you go to your local bookstore, you can certainly ask them at the reference desk to purchase it for you, and they'll bring it in. You can buy it online. You can go to Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Borders has it. You can also go to my website, which is www.bigmeaning.com, big, B-I-G, meaning, M-E-A-N-I-N-G, bigmeaning.com. And if people want to contact me, they can also use my email address. It's there. My cell phone number is listed there. You can call me there. I love getting phone calls and emails. So.
Okay. Wow. I want to say, one, this was a very interesting and inspirational, informative discussion today. And I want to wish you much continued success in your business and in your personal life. And I thank you so much for joining us today.
You know, it was absolutely my pleasure.
Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, you too.
All right.
Oh, no matter who pushes me, I know I'm not going to let you. I'm not going to let you get me down. No, no, no.
Thank you for tuning in to the Yvonne Pierre Show. For more information about the show, how to be a guest, or to let us know what you think about today's show or previous shows, visit us at www.hyhradio.com. Remember to keep God first, know that you are blessed, and always be true to yourself. I love you. God loves you. Thank you for listening.